Welcome to another episode of the V2 Boxing Podcast. As always, I'm your host. I'm Paul, and tonight I'm joined by Damien and Chris. Good evening, fellas. How are we?
Good evening, lads.
Yeah, not bad, mate. Thank you.
Fantastic. Well, just before we crack on with the big news from stateside, sad to say that Glyn Leach unfortunately passed away in recent days. Glyn was the editor of Boxing News. No, Boxing Monthly, sorry. I think I've just killed Tris Dixon. Shit. Yeah, Boxing Monthly, and Glyn was, he had a lot of positive stuff to say about the work we do, and also many other fan sites, and I know Sam, who is a big listener to this, he's had a lot of praise from him in the past. So our thoughts come out to his family, friends, at this time. Let's have a look stateside, though. obviously the news that Cal Brook won his first world title. How did you guys score the fight, first of all? Or did you score it?
I scored it. I had Brook winning it by a point, maybe two. I thought it was one of them fights that had that kind of feel. That although it was close, I felt comfortable giving it to the guy, even though it was close. And I think most people, I've not seen too many that scored it for Brook. I've seen the odd few, but I thought Brook was a deserving winner. Like I said, it had been closer than a lot of others seemed to.
Mm-hmm. How about yourself, Damien?
Well, I watched it the repeat on Sunday morning, and after watching it the first time, I had Porter ahead by, it was 115, 113, I had it, but then I was sort of thinking to myself, probably being swayed by Jim Watt and his nonsense, so I went back and watched it again, and after I watched it again, I was just watching Cal Brook more, because it was pretty scrappy sort of to watch. Even whenever I did score at the Porter in the first time, I still wasn't happy with scoring it to him. But, just the way he was fighting, he was coming in close, he was hitting the back of the head and thought there was a lot of fouling coming from him. But then whenever I watched it back the second time, I actually scored 116, 112 to Brook, sort of looking back in hindsight on it. But it's one of them fights you could have scored it either way. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of people, talking about the scorecards, the 117, 111, and sort of at the start I was sort of thinking, that's a crazy scorecard to give, but then whenever I watched it back the second time and I sort of gave it 8-4 to Brook, and then I can sort of see why, maybe 117, 112 wasn't far off sort of my second score, so I don't really think the scorecards were, that bad after watching it a second time.
Personally, I had it 115, 113 to Brook. Interesting you said you didn't see many scores go to Porter. 80% of journalists that Bobby Hunter for Boxing News collected had it for Brook. Only 9 people had it for Porter. So it is quite a wide margin. Interestingly, Kieran Gibbons, who we've had on the show in the past, had it for Porter by, I think, 117, 111. And he was very surprised when Brook got the decision. And I know Tony Jeffries put on his Facebook page, it's nice to see the old adage of you have to take the belt from the champion, which, to be fair, is complete nonsense.
Yeah,
because obviously you've just got to win the fight. So it was nice to see that tweeted. Were you impressed with Brook overall, though? I thought he used his jab quite well, and it just seemed Porter was so one-dimensional that Brook didn't really have to go through his full repertoire of punches and things.
Yeah, I thought, obviously you can't be too critical of a guy that's just won a world title, but I thought Brook was kind of fighting to the level of his opponent. I think I expected that Brook would have to perform better than that to win. As it turns out, he just did enough to win, and I think if Porter had upped it a notch and been a bit better, I think Brook could have done it as well. Mm-hmm. I said on the side of the day, I actually think that Brook kind of made it as hard for himself as he could have done. I think he gave Porter the best opportunity he would have to beat him, because like you said, Brook did use the jab nicely, but I think at times he probably underused it. I think Porter was a sitting duck on his way in for it. and sometimes Brooke didn't use it as much as he should have. Sometimes he got caught up reacting rather than getting off first, which meant that Porter was able to get inside and just smother a lot of his work. So I'm impressed with Brooke, but I was more disappointed with Porter. I was really expecting a bit more from him. I wasn't one of these guys that thought he was the next big thing in American boxing. Although I officially picked him to win this fight, I certainly said that he was anything but a foregone conclusion. Brooke was a very live underdog, but I just really expected a bit more from Paul. But even if he had a board, it's just the way the fight went. I really think Brooke would have just dealt with it and could have booked his game too. I think he got dragged down to Paul's level a little bit.
Yeah, I sort of think sort of the first time that whenever I sat down to watch the fight at the start, I didn't stay up to watch it, but sort of there was a couple of things that were sort of maybe hindering my sort of judgment on what was really happening, because in the back of my head I was thinking about Brooke's stamina, and even as the fight began, I was thinking about, you know, what's going to happen towards the end of the fight, and it sort of took my eye off what was really happening at the start. But whenever I watched it a second time again, then sort of really appreciated what Brooke was doing. I thought, to be honest, as Chris said there, with Porter, just expected, you know, a whole lot more. As even last week, and whenever you said to me, you know, about making a prediction, sort of I was all over the place, thinking, you know, there's so many factors to take into consideration. And I think, you know, looking at the Malignaggi fight, you know, people thought, you know, sort of Porter was the welterweight Mike Tyson. You know, he could just go in and blow out Brooke. And, you know, we all sort of thinking back about, I don't know, I think maybe if Brooke hadn't have had that fight with Carson Jones, I think Porter maybe would have took him out. You know, I think that first fight against Carson Jones was probably set him up, you know, to win that fight, because, you know, it sort of showed him that whenever he's got a pressure fighter in front of him, you know, he really got that gut check that first time in the Carson Jones fight, and I think he learned massively from that. And, you know, as the fight went on, you know, you've seen after about the sixth round that Porter, his jaw was hanging open in the corner, and, you know, you could see he was starting to get tired, and Brooke just looked as fit as ever. I was really surprised by Brooke as well. You know, I suppose that people, you know, all had their opinions on, you know, whether he was really that dedicated, and, you know, whether his stamina issues in the past, and the fact that he's come into fights, and he normally fights at welterweight, and there has been fights he's come in at late middleweight, and, you know, whether he could, you know, sort of, if he had the dedication to sort of really take it on. And it was his first big fight, you know, his first world title fight, and, you know, he had all these points, but he in the end wasn't it back the second time. You know, I thought he did do brilliant, and he stuck to his plan, and his he said that he had a nutritionist, you know, for that fight, and he really sort of hit it nail on. And again, you know, it was just a matter of being disappointed by Porter. He seemed just as if, you know, I'll just rush forward and, you know, just start throwing shots everywhere. Like, the amount of shots he missed was just, you know, unbelievable. And the two of them got tied up, and he was throwing shots around behind the head, and, you know, he didn't really seem to have much of a, you know, much of a game plan, or it just seemed to be like, just run forward and try and push him back. And, you know, whenever he ran forward, Kale just seemed to be ready for it.
Well, just on that point there, I apologise, I can't remember if it was you or Chris who made the mini Mike Tyson point. I do apologise. Was it Chris?
It was Damien.
Damien, sorry. I've had a long day. My apologies, mate. Sam, who obviously tunes into the show every week, he said people were making Porter out to be a mini Mike Tyson. However, he came into the fight with a KO with a stoppage percentage of just 60%. Is that really the ferocious puncher he's made out to be? I kind of agree with what, you know, yourself and Sam are saying there, in that I think the Malignaggi win flattered Porter an awful lot. I think when we did our show after that fight as well, I think Chris made points regarding that. My feeling was that Brooke didn't have the gas tank. And that was what I was really worried about. I think we made the point of it on last week's show, didn't we, myself and you, Damien, that Brooke could sort that gas tank out, he should theoretically be fine, as he's the better boxer. So let's have a look at the future, because there are some names now that are sort of opening up for Cal Brooke. One of those names is Keith Thurman, who I am, I'll admit it, I'm well and truly on the hype train. He is the next big thing in boxing, certainly in 147, at the 147 division anyway.
Yeah.
I think you're quite high on him as well, Damien.
Yeah.
If he's offered to travel to the UK, it's a huge homecoming fight. There's no chance we're going to see Eddie Hearn make that fight now, is there?
No, I don't think so. I just sort of laugh. I know that Eddie Hearn was caught up in the with the emotion, you know, of Kilbrook winning the title. There was an interview just after where he actually says in the same sentence, in the same breath, that, you know, that Kilbrook's got to think big, and, you know, when you win a fight like this, you know, you can't just fight out of your own backyard. You have to think big. And then just literally as soon as he said that, it was, we're going to look at some dates for Sheffield, which, you know, is just obviously just going to start making fights in his own backyard. And, you know, I have no issue with that, just as long as they just keep riding high. You know, I don't want to see this being like, you know, Nathan Cleverley, where, you know, he won his world title and, you know, the Frank Warren tried to, you know, just make money off sort of silly fights. You know, Kilbrook has got the talent. He's proved that he can go over to America and, you know, face adversity. And, you know, I hope he really does just maybe go over to stateside more than he stays in Sheffield, because, you know, even if he was to lose, it's not the end of the world. You know, he's already proved that he can go over and he can fight. Especially, I know that we look at Sean Porter and think, you know, he's one-dimensional, you know, but he is tough, you know, as they come. And he didn't stop coming forward the whole fight. And, you know, if Kilbrook's able to handle that, then, you know, he should be able to handle, you know, the majority of welterweights in that division. But you mentioned Keith Thurman there. You know, I just think Thurman's skill and his movement and his power, you know, would probably just maybe be a bit too much for Brook.
I think Keith Thurman's got the fastest hand in fastest hands in the division.
It's not even the fastest hand. It's just like he'll be at your left side, and he just seems to bounce on his toes. And as he's moving, he's able to, you know, able to connect power. Just as he's moving, you know, he can move backwards. He can move to the side, and just whenever he lands, he just seems to knock people out, or else just stagger people. And,
yeah.
You know, I think it'll be maybe, you know, all right, Kilbrook, it wasn't too hard to catch Porter on the way in, but, you know, it would be a good matchup of styles to see how he would catch Thurman, just as Thurman's on the move.
Yeah. The other one is Amir Khan. Now, this is a fight that I think we on V2 Boxing, before the site V2 Journal, plus 606 V2, have been quite hot on for a while, because there's been some rivalry between these two. Now, is it a case with Khan, Chris, that as soon as Brook lands clean, because Brook isn't that much slower than him, as soon as he lands clean, it's going to be fight over?
No, I don't think so. You know, obviously, with Khan, any fight, you know there's a danger that he can get clocked and then hurt. And, but, you know, if you can survive Marcus Maidana onslaught, then, you know, being tagged once by Kilbrook should not spell the end of a fight, in theory. I know no two fights are the same, and, you know, that was a 140. This fight's going to be a 147 if it happens, and different conditioning going into the fight can affect your punch resistance and so on. But, I mean, you know, Khan's chin's a little bit shaky, but it's not absolutely made out of glass. You know, I think it probably gets overplayed a little bit how desperately poor his whiskers are. Brook's a decent puncher. Certainly hits hard enough to keep anyone honest and earn your respect. But I'm not sure if Brook's power is going to be that much of a factor if he fights Khan. I think he'd be a bit foolish to go in there just with the attitude that, you know, all he needs to do is just try and bomb him out, but just look for that one big shot and change the fight. I don't see it being that factor. I think it's going to be a fight that he'd have to probably go quite a few rounds to win, go around the long way, maybe try and outbox him and use his jab and, his ring movement. But, I don't think it's just a case of, oh, he's got to land a punch and that's it, personally.
Okay. So let's have a look at the undercard then, because obviously another fight that is really, you know, interesting to a British boxer, George Groves, is Durrell versus Beaker, Anthony Durrell versus Sakio Beaker, and Durrell got the win this time round in a fight that started out more like WWE, which was, you know, the referee. I don't think the referee was great by any means in the fight, but I thought the fact that, you know, he tried to cut it out as early as he could, you know, he did all right. We're not really going to stay on this fight for too long because it makes my head hurt thinking about it. But the rather deserved winner for you both?
Yeah. I have to admit, I haven't actually got around to seeing the fight yet because on the Sunday morning, they only showed on Sky Sports 3, they only showed the Kilbrook and Porter and the Omar Figueroa fight.
I tell you what, we're going to go on.
Well,
now you mentioned it, mate, that was a hell of a fight.
Yeah.
That was a superb fight. You know, two guys really going at it. The stoppage was just super, just awesome. You know, because his corner were really calm. And what was with the break between rounds, though? Has that been explained yet? Because that wasn't a minute. That was more like two or three. Bit concerning, that one.
No, I'm not sure about that myself.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to other things in the world of boxing. I've just put it out on the Mixler feed, and Sam's replied to me, so cheers, Sam. This week, the photos have emerged of Anthony Joshua sparring with Vladimir Klitschko. It'll be a hell of an experience for Joshua, who's, you know, I think it was you, Damien, or it might have been Owen, said he's the hardest hitting heavyweight he's ever heard from ringside. Yeah, it feels like he's punching you in your ear when he lands. You've obviously seen him live at Wembley, both of you. Damien, how do you feel that sparring with... Well, let's look at it another way. Yeah. Let's look at it through cynical eyes, first of all, Damien. Do you see this as a scouting mission from Klitschko, or do you see it as, you know, Joshua isn't going to be at that level by the time Klitschko hangs the gloves up, and it's just a, you know, a way of helping the new blood on the scene?
Yeah, well, I think it's just, you know, Eddie Hearn's probably just sent him over just for the experience. You know, I don't think, you know, what's Joshua's, what, maybe about five or six fights in so far.
Yeah.
You're talking maybe about another, maybe 2 or 3 years, you know, before he catches up with Klitschko, and God knows what way Klitschko will be by then, you know, depending on, you know, who to put in front of him. You know, what is he now? He's 37 or 36, 37, 38. But if there's ever a heavyweight that, you know, is going to give you experience, it's going to be the best there is at the minute. So I think it's good that he's in there, because he'll learn, you know, I'm sure he'll learn all of Vladimir's tricks, you know, what to do, you know, whenever an opponent comes up close. You know, it's probably just a learning curve for him, and if not, it's the best that he can get.
How about yourself, then, Chris? First of all, maybe slightly different for yourself. How do you? It's a good thing, this, right?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing for Joshua. I don't think it really makes any odds to Vladimir. I don't believe for a second that he's trying to sort of, you know, get a read on Joshua as a potential opponent to see if he should be clearing off before Joshua gets it. You know, Klitschko sparred with many guys who were ranked contenders. You know, obviously Joshua's a young lad coming through. I don't think he'll even be in Vladimir's conscience at the minute, even thought. I just think it's... surely a good move from Hearn and Joshua just to get a bit of experience out of there, like Damien said. Really, I just agree with that. They're doing a world of good, you know. And you know, I mean, you know, the way Joshua's, you know, knocking everyone over, you know, it looks great. But similar to David Price, you know, the upset 18 months ago, however long ago it was now, since the Tony Thompson fight, you're kind of thinking, well, yeah, we've got a big hit in heavyweight prospect. It looks great. He's got the moves. You know, he exudes confidence, but he's going to get, you know, chin check sooner or later. He's going to get a good check or a chin check. Now, granted, not everyone likes the way Vladimir goes about it, but he is very good at protecting his chin and, you know, nullifying any mini crisis when it comes up. So I think, you know, if Joshua could just pick up a couple of things like that and maybe, you know, learn to be a bit more patient and keep the distance, another thing that he's going to need, you know, he's not going to be able to just go in there and knock people out in 2 or 3 rounds every time. You know, if he can learn those tactics, protecting the chin, being patient, picking his shots, then, you know, it'll just make him a much more formidable fighter. And, you know, and he already looks like, a can't-miss prospect to me. So I just think it's a good move from him, good move for Hearn. And, you know, for Vladimir, I don't think it makes any odds. It's just, a case of keeping sharp before the Pulev fight.
Yeah. Okay, just on that, Sam has said... I think Joshua sparring Vladimir is a fantastic experience. Who better to learn to than the best in the world? And it could be seen as Klitschko looking to gain knowledge of Joshua, but if they ever do fight, it'll be a different fighter by then. Joshua will have improved and Vladimir won't have. So it benefits Joshua more in the long run. See, that's nice to have, you know, not through a cynic's eyes, because if you had a look on our forum, everybody would think that Vladimir Klitschko is Dr. Evil and he's currently plotting to take down the Earth or some crap like that.
I suppose it's good experience for Vladimir as well, because in terms of, you know, heavyweight sparring partners, you know, the heavyweight scene's pretty, you know, it's pretty brutal at the minute. And to have a young guy coming in who's in shape, who's fast, who hits hard too, probably, you know, it'll do Vladimir the world of good as well. You know, who's sort of he's not lackluster, he's not slow coming forward, plodding forward towards him. So he's got someone who's fast, hits hard, and, you know, it's probably does Vladimir, you know, good as well.
Yeah,
and I think, yeah, I mean, just Damien said there, age 38 and not really being extended in any fights, it would be pretty easy for Vladimir to, you know, get a bit soft now mentally and sort of take his out of the ball. But the great thing about Joshua is just the feeling you get about him and the confidence he exudes. Okay, yeah, it's sparring. They're not going to be trying to take each other's heads off. But even so, you hear stories about guys getting timid in sparring when they're up against, you know, a major star or one of the best in the division. You know, I think even Frotch said when he was sparring Howard Eastman, you know, at the turn of the century, I mean, it, you know, it was still, to him, a nerve-wracking experience, and he probably did seize up a little bit. I don't think Joshua will. I think he'll just save the experience. I don't think he'll care for Vladimir's reputation. So I think it'll be good work for Vladimir too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's, you know, the heavyweight champion and the future heavyweight champion talked about. Let's have a look at...
still on Eddie's payroll, are you?
I've just had me check through the post. I saw that it is. let's have a look at another heavyweight who has, you know, he's done a lot of things. He's beaten up internet trolls who are probably harder than the other 32 people he's fought. Deontay Wilder. He struggled. Well, he struggled. He, you know, beat Gavin in four rounds. Well, retired between rounds, wasn't he? And he knocked him down in the third and the fourth. But he didn't look impressive. And apparently next for him is Bermain Stiverne. Does he have any chance whatsoever against Stiverne, or is it going to be a case of as soon as somebody lands a punch on his chin, he's going to crumble?
I don't think we know yet. It's, you know, as I said, I think it was said last week that, you know, it's the same as Price. He needs to come up against, you know, a world-class fighter. But I think that fight at the weekend, you could just chalk that off to, you know, it's maybe his heart just wasn't in it. You know, he knows that he's got this world title fight ahead, and, you know, maybe his mind's on that. And, you know, you've got Jason Cavern coming in, and, you know, he's never, you know, we all know Deontay Wilder. If he wanted to, he could have took him out in one round, you know, if we look back upon his previous opponents. But, you know, I don't think that fight, you know, we can really use that as a stick to beat him with. You know, it was sort of just like a keep busy fight until his world title fight. And although he sort of was a bit lackluster in the way he fought for the first three rounds, or the first two rounds, and, you know, I don't think that's going to be the same once he fights Stiverne, because when he goes in against Stiverne, he knows that this is it. This is sort of the same as Kell Brook. He's going to have to train as hard as he's ever trained. If he wins this WBC belt, then he's going to be, you know, he's going to be a massive star in America. So, you know, I doubt that he put as much training into his fight against Gavern than he's going to put in against Stiverne.
Okay, so just before we come over to you then, Chris, comment on Mixler. As Wilder is still huge unknown quantity. He's clearly got great power. He's talented, but to have gone 32 fights without facing anyone of note is poor. How he's mandatory challenger without facing anyone is beyond me, but that's boxing. Sam actually thinks he'll beat Stiverne. That's a brave call, because Stiverne looked very impressive against Areola. Showed really good speed. And not only that, but very good power and the ability to soak up a lot of punishment, because he got caught a fair few times by Chris Areola. So, Chris, am I wrong? And is Wilder the next big thing in heavyweight boxing?
Well, what is the next big thing? I mean, I think he could beat Stiverne. That's a fight I've really not made my mind up on, to be honest. I can, you know, if someone calls it for Wilder, I can see the point. If someone calls it for Stiverne, I can see the point. Next big thing, I think he can win a title. Whether or not he can, you know, become a consistent, you know, a really long-serving, consistent champion, someone worthy of picking up the reins from Vladimir once Vladimir's gone, or maybe even someone who could be a threat to Vladimir for a unification bout, you know, I'm not sure about that. It's just the chin. You've just got to see his chin tested. You know, judging by some sparring and amateur videos, there's suspicions that maybe he's, you know, his chin's a little bit tender. But, you know, I'm sure Stiverne will test that chin at some point. So it's just a fight I'm really looking forward to. I know, you know, among some sort of chin stroking so-called connoisseurs, you know, it's sort of seen as sacrilege and a sign that, you know, nothing about the sport to get excited about a Wilder fight, or, you know, or think that maybe he might just be a decent fighter. But I think it's a good thing that we've got, you know,
Damien's just doing the washing.
It's not on their quantity anymore, but it's a good thing that we've got some new blood coming into the title picture. I mean, for years, guys like John Ruiz getting recycled in World Title Fights, you know, Shannon Briggs, and, you know, God knows what else. So I'm looking forward to it. I think he can win a title. I think he could be, you know, I think he could be a good value for money heavyweight operator, but someone to really fill the shoes and bring some real, you know, glitz and stature back to the heavyweight division for America, I'm not sure about that.
Damien, leave the washing up till after the show, please, mate.
What about?
I said, leave the washing up till after the show, please, mate.
No, somebody's at my door.
They're currently sat in Damien's front room having a cup of tea then. Come in and tell me the good news.
Up the door and just give a finger.
Right, so let's sort of move away, because obviously there were some other fighters on this card at the weekend. I realised that we're nearly half an hour into the show and we're still talking about fights. But Callum Smith and Luke Campbell both made their stateside debut at the weekend. Both won. Both in very impressive fashion. Are you crunching the bones of these Jehovah's Witnesses or something as we're talking?
Yeah. No, just sort of tidying up the table so I can sit down. Hey, sorry, go ahead. I'm ready.
Tell you what, this is what live podcasting
is about.
Right,
come on.
Yeah, definitely.
Luke Campbell and Callum Smith both made their debuts over in the States on Saturday night. Both won in impressive style. Callum Smith, obviously extremely talented, probably not that far from away from British title. Just how highly do you rate Callum Smith, because his first two fights he didn't really impress, but since then he seems to have found a bit of rock in his gloves. I'll chuck it over to you first, Damien. You're at the table.
I only seen the knockout at the weekend, and it was a pretty brutal one, to be honest. But I think he's heads and shoulders above the rest of the Smith brothers, and you know, if any of them are going to go far, you know, don't really see Paul Smith beating Arthur Abraham, no matter how shot Abraham is. But Callum Smith does look, you know, he has got the skill set and he's got the power, and you know, he seems to have a good head on his shoulders. So, you know, I do rate him very highly, and you know, I think that he is going to go quite a big way. But you know, it's boxing. It just takes one slip up. But you know, at the minute he hasn't put a foot wrong really. So you know, we can't really judge him on anything until he, you know, steps up, you know, probably the maybe European level or whatnot.
How about you, Chris?
You know, you may as well just repeat everything Damien said tonight, because, again, I'm just sort of in complete agreement with what he said. I think he's definitely the best out of the Smith brothers. I think, you know, certainly the best talent. You know, like I say, I just, you know, now it just needs to start. It's just a case of finding the right opponents for him. You know, it's such a fine line. People want to, you know, with the early exposure these days and the fact that, you know, British boxing is booming at the minute, and there are so big, you know, big numbers and big fights going on. People want to see guys rushed in. How many fights has Callum into his career now? Is it 11, 12?
Yeah.
You know, it's just make sure they're finding the right opponents. They have to be learning fights. But at the same time, you know, he's not ready for the deep end yet. You can still see that he makes the kind of little amateur mistakes, which, you know, but the great thing is, if you look at him from his sixth fight to his 12th, you can see the improvements in him. And as you said, the power, you know, the way he's sitting on his shots, that's been the most alarming thing. And that's really come into his game in the last, you know, the last year or so. So I think he's got a really good future ahead of him. Like I said, just hope that in the next sort of 12 to 18 months, I think, you know, 18 months down the line, you start thinking about a world title fight, perhaps. You know, there could be a Brit at super middleweight. I mean, obviously there's French now, but there could be another Brit in 18 months at super middleweight holding the title. And if he's matched well enough, and I think if he continues where he is now, I think he's going to be at the top of the division or near the top for a long while.
And the other one then is Luke Campbell. Now, Luke gets a bit of stick on our forums because obviously he's a bit older than Callum, and he hasn't dealt with his opponents as impressively, apparently. We found out earlier this year that have been some family issues outside of the ring. Like his dad wasn't very well. So, you know, Luke Campbell's another guy. As well, in the division he's in, there's not that many fights out there, really, is there? So how highly do you rate Luke Campbell?
I think he's a fair fighter. I've got to say, I'm you know, of the Olympic batch, he's probably, you know, of the lower rung, in my opinion, as a professional. You know, I certainly think Joshua's a better prospect as a professional. I'd probably say I actually believe in the long run, Ogogo as well, Anthony Ogogo will end up being make a better professional than Campbell. Campbell's, you know, I worry about him maybe ending up the same kind of way as Frankie Gavin, just, you know, good at judging distance, you know, decent defence, punch a little bit, but nothing really to distinguish him in the pro game. And, you know, he's a lefty too, like Gavin, and yeah, just lacking that little bit of extra, you know, the X factor, something that really makes him different from the other sort of guys in and around his division that he's going to be lined up against in the next 18 months. I mean, you know, you talk about, say a guy like Matthew Macklin, but, you know, even though Macklin's not quite at the highest play in middleweight, he's still got things that stand out, his kind of special effects, you know, his body punch and his work rate. Campbell just doesn't seem to have any of that, and that's what makes me worry. I just think that, you know, really solid all-rounders will just have a little bit too much of everything for him. But, yeah. You know, he's going to develop more. He's going to get better, so he could still confound me and prove me wrong. But I'm not as excited about his prospects in the pro ranks as I am about some of the other Olympians.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's have a quick look ahead at this weekend's action. I'm going to throw two names at you you've probably never heard of. Marcia Elena Acuna and Edith Soledad Matisse. How do you see that fight going?
Oh, Matisse all day, every day.
It's
come on, are you being serious? Come on.
I mean, don't. I hope our listeners, if we have any female listeners, don't take this the wrong way, but it's a bad weekend for the sport when there is no boxing in this country, not even a small hall show on this weekend. And the only fight on BoxRec, oh sorry, there are two fights that are 4 and a 5 star. Both of them are women's boxing. And then next weekend, the same thing. The only fight that is a 4 or 5 star is a woman's fight.
Well, let's hear it for the girls.
Unless they're wrestling in jello, I don't want to watch it.
I've just made
this show extremely sexist.
We did have a female listener once, so you have to be careful.
Yeah, it was Pauline.
How is the old girl doing these days?
Oh, Jesus. Do you know what? There's a woman's box. I'm just having a look at BoxRec. There's a 3-star women's fight in Peru next week, and it's a higher rated fight than Jaleon Love against Rogelio Medina. That says how good Jaleon Love really is. And Badu Jack's on that card as well. That's the Floyd Mayweather card from Nevada.
Yeah, he's got a rebuilding job on his hands, hasn't he?
Right, I've just, let's have a quick scan through just to have a look at what this weekend is. As you can see, one a bit like this last week, this Damien, no running order, real, you know, plan. And the reason I'm just double checking is that somebody on the chat has just shouted out that Austin Trout's fighting this weekend.
Really?
According to Sam, let's have a look. No, Austin Trout fights, yeah, 22nd. Why wasn't that? Oh, I was looking, that's Friday night, that's why. There we go. So I only think about boxing on a Saturday. Yeah, Daniel Dawson, 43-1, 26 knockouts, 1 stoppage. How do you see this one going? It's obviously a Friday night fight, which we won't get to see it over here on television, but there are other ways to watch it.
Yeah. Isn't that on ESPN, though?
Might be. But then you've got to have BT Sport for that. I mean, yeah, you know, it's just... Might as well just wait until you've downloaded it and you can send me the disc.
Yeah, I've got all those anyway.
I know, so have I. They're in my drawer upstairs after you sent me. So how do you see this fight going? I mean, I don't know much about Daniel Dawson, I'll be honest. Sam, if you know anything about him, mate, fire in. Feel free. Guys, how do you see it going?
I'd say it's probably just a build-off fight for Austin Trout. You know, he's had a couple of setbacks after, you know, his last fight against,
Ascendra Lara.
Who?
Lara.
So after Lara and sort of Canelo, so he's got a bit of rebuilding to do, so I'm sure it's probably, you know, it's a good matchup. The guy's fighting's got a, you know, good record on paper, so, but with favour Austin Trout, you know, he's a classier boxer. He was unlucky to lose to Canelo, you know, it was a fight I thought he actually won, but obviously they had the Mayweather fight already signed, sealed and delivered, but no, it's probably just a fight that they're probably just trying to rebuild him, but again, he has shown he is vulnerable as well, so you never quite know, but try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I was surprised how easily Lara dealt with him, so I suppose it's, the main thing is how his confidence is going to be affected, you know. In theory, he shouldn't really have any problems here, but I don't think he will. But coming off a heavy defeat like that, you know, you never know. Never 100% sure.
Well, he did fight Daniel Gill for the IBO middleweight title back in 2007. So that's going a long way back. He lost a unanimous decision for that one. So, you know, he's only really fought out of Australia twice. Once, maybe, actually. I might be wrong there. Yeah, he's only ever fought out of Australia once. And that's the only time he got stopped. So I can probably say we're going to see a stoppage on Friday night. So, yeah. Right.
Give me the round. Give me the round. Go on.
I'll go for about the 7th.
Okay.
There we go.
Austin Charles will be knocked out in the 7th round.
I should have been clearer. Damn it. Right. What we're going to... I was thinking about something today to see how we can maybe get a bit of stuff going on Twitter and Facebook. And Chris, you've started the Fantasy Fight series, which obviously goes in the magazine every month. What I want to do is talk about a different fight every weekend between current boxers. Doesn't matter a size, weight, whatever. And basically, it's just to have a general chat, see how we feel they do if they were the same size, still had all the attributes they have, and still lack all the attributes that they lack. Pound for pound, basically. So I was thinking.
So we're talking if Vladimir was the.
If Vladimir was the same height
as Mikey Garcia.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
So everybody's the same height, same weight, but they've all got obviously their relevant abilities and their relevant vulnerabilities. So I haven't really thought of any boxes to talk about this week, so I was hoping you guys could chuck a couple up.
Go get him, Tiger. Come on, Damien.
Don't be calling him Tiger. Those poor Jehovah's Witnesses.
Well, it'd probably be a dull fight to watch, but there's Landy Dora against Guillermo Rigondeaux.
Oof, yeah.
It wouldn't be a dull fight to watch. Are you selling tickets?
I would do well. If you could magically make him the same size, I'd have to go with Rigondeaux in that one heavily. I mean, Lara's a really good, really good technician, but everything he can do, Rigondeaux can do a little bit better. Rigondeaux's vulnerability, he's been shaken up. He was put down by Donaire. He was shook up by Cordoba, shook him up. Marroquin shook him up slightly. So I think, he's got a vulnerability to really big hitters, perhaps. If you can catch him, he's so slick, he should be sponsored by BP. I really couldn't see a way that Lara would win that if they were the same size.
I was even actually watching there, what was it, 2 days ago? I was watching Lomachenko and Guy Russell Jr. again.
Yeah.
And so I was going to throw it out there about, if Rigondeaux was to move up and fight Lomachenko, how would you see that going?
I think Rigondeaux beats him. Rigondeaux is one of these fighters you just don't see him losing. There's not a situation in my mind I can see Rigondeaux losing, because we don't know. Right, we know that Lomachenko couldn't handle being bullied and the dirty fighters, but how does he cope when he can't hit his opponent and he constantly misses? And the thing is as well, Rigondeaux stays within range, because that's, when he gets caught, when he gets caught and he gets dropped, he stays, sort of in the pocket, and he makes people miss from the pocket, which it's not an easy skill to do, but it also must drive you wild if you're the guy fighting him. And I think Lomachenko loses his cool. Probably ends up getting a bit brash and trying to rush him, and he'll just get picked off.
I would have to go, if they were to fight him now, I would certainly have to go with Rigondeaux heavily, just because and I said this, when Lomachenko went professional, and people getting really over the top with him, and great talent though he is, and I said that a lot of people said it's still not the same as the amateurs. And I think if you'd have put, Salido as his second fight, and I think Salido would have been too much for Rigondeaux if it was Rigondeaux's second fight as well. No matter how good you are as an amateur, I still think the pros is, is in effect, it is a different sport. And there's certain things you have to bring to the ring, the professionals that you don't when you're in the best for your country. So just on the fact that Lomachenko is still very inexperienced as a professional, I think, what Rigondeaux has learned in his 4 or 5 years as a professional would easily see him through, and I think he just won out a pretty comfortable points winner. One thing to think about is that Lomachenko is a lefty, though, like Rigondeaux. I mean, fighting guys like Donnie, the Danae fight, I mean, the jab for Danae was just non-existent, because landing it against the guy who's a good defence and the lefty, just, you know, it's almost impossible when you're as good as Ringo. But, you know, as a lefty, Lomachenko could pose him, you know, could neutralise that and pose him a few more difficulties, but yeah, I just think Ringo would have a bit too much of everything for him.
Yeah.
Sam's just chucking out Rigondo versus Mayweather if both are the same height and weight. Or same weight.
Mayweather.
Yeah.
Mayweather.
Yeah. I'm going for a draw.
He can fight inside, and Ringo hasn't really shown he can do that effectively yet. Not on the same level as Mayweather.
I'm going for a draw. Okay. Only because I've just said that I can't see a situation where Rigondo loses.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
You know, I've sort of led myself down that road already, haven't I? Right, well, I think that's it really for this week's show. Only a short one, really, in comparison to other weeks. However, there's not an awful lot to talk to us. There's not been a lot in British boxing. However, I do want to just ask one thing. It's just jumped into my head. Frank Warren and the situation with Leonard Bundu. What do you make of that situation? Because obviously, Bundu saying that checks are bouncing.
Well, I mean, it doesn't look good, does it? I mean, you know, Warren has got, you know, if the fighters are to believe, Warren has got history of this happening before, but so many things have gone wrong for Warren. You know, in the past, you know, maybe you just thought it was him trying to skim off the top and break people's wills and get them to just, you know, concede rather than go through the long call bout, just concede for a lower purse and whatnot. But so many things have gone wrong, and his stable's in such dire straits, and he's had so many disappointments, you know, the latest being, you know, his so-called biggest fight of the summer, you know, the Chisora Fury rematch, him having to be postponed and losing so many of his key fights to other promoters. This time it kind of makes you wonder, well, you know, is it literally that just money isn't there for him anymore? I mean, every interview he does now, he's, you know, I'd love to get him on and try and get to the bottom of it ourselves, but every interview he does, he seems to be, you know, just bemoaning the recession and throwing papers about and looking for any excuse to slag off other promoters. And, you know, it just seems to be kind of a little bit lost at the minute. And, I mean, you know, a guy who's been around as long as him, you can never write him off, and, you know, he knows the game better than anyone. He's been through tough times before. But is it all just getting a little bit too much from now? Is he finally just sort of getting to the end of the road? You know,
it's just
I don't know how you feel about it, Damien, but
yeah, well, I think at the minute, even though he's not a fully fledged Frank Warren fighter, but he's got Kyle Frampton there, and I think if Kyle Frampton beats Martinez here in the sixth, I think it'll be stateside for Frampton, and I think Frank Warren will lose that too, and especially after Frankie Gavin losing as well. He just seems to, and Frank Buglione lost, and, you know, all the fighters who, the, you know, Frank Warren was trying to build up to be the star of the stables are all just seeming to fall by the wayside. So, you know, it is pretty desperate at the minute.
The only one who hasn't done that is Billy Joe Saunders, you know, you can't expect one man to carry your stable. Be interesting, because obviously Frank's, you know, Francis Warren, I think Francis's brother, I can't think of his name. If those guys were to start from the bottom now, they actually seem to have the right way of doing things, because obviously they're Queensbury. I think they're the guys who've been putting on the Tyne and Weir shows. The one that, like, Bully only lost. So, you know, they're decent fights as well.
Yeah.
It's just that Frank, unfortunately, doesn't put on good shows. And Paul Butler, you know, Sam's just chucked another one up. Paul Butler's another one who's, you know, Frank's really looked after him. Got him a world title, you know.
I think sort of with Butler, you know, just down at that weight, you know, the casual fans just aren't as excited just as you go down the weights like that, you know. And although Butler has, you know, he has the skill and he is an exciting fighter, I just think, you know, it's going to be pretty hard to promote Paul Butler up the, you know, base star, you know, just based on the weight. So I think that, you know, it's...
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned it, didn't I? Last year we applied for press passes to go to one of the Aintree shows. I think it might be the start of this year. And it was half empty. There were no press there, and we didn't get a press pass. We'd applied. We'd asked for it. And we just, you know, we didn't even get it. That really annoyed me that night. And it was sort of, you know, I for the site, I thought about not even bothering with Frank Warren again, not really giving any promotion. But then I thought, you know, at the same time, we can't really do that, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know that Nathan Orr, you know, he's on Twitter.
Yeah.
I normally bump into him at the press conferences over here, the Frampton ones, and he was actually at that fight, the Stuart Hall and the Paul Butler fight.
Yeah, he covers the North East, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. top bloke. Right, well, I'll tell you what, we'll call it a night there then. We've got a 45-minute show. Thanks very much for everybody who tunes in on Podomatic and on Mixlr. We are on Twitter at V2Boxing, and we're also on Facebook at V2Boxing there as well. The website, www.v2boxing.com. We're always looking for new writers at the moment. It's just the three of us, and we're desperate to get some new writers on board because we are all mentally shagged. And we're running out of steam, we really are. So if you know anybody who just wants to write for us, then tell them to get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, or they can drop me an email, paulh@v2journal.com. But for now, that is goodbye from me. It's goodbye from these guys, and have a nice weekend, everyone.
See you, lads.
Get out.